Oh, hello everyone. My name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath, Saint Congregation Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is September the 12th, 2024, or it is Tishri 10, 2028. This is the Day of the Atonement. We're going to start this service in the wash and the blood. Have you been to Yahshua for the cleansing power? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you fully trusting in His grace's heart? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood? In the soap and blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless as the whitest snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you boiling daily by the Savior's side? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Do you rest each moment in the crucified? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood? In the soap and the blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless as the whitest snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? When the bridegroom cometh, will your robes be white? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Will your soul be ready, washed, conscience bright, and be washed in the blood of the Lamb? In the blood, in the soap, in the blood of the Lamb. Are your garments spotless as the whitest snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Aside the garments that are stained with sin, and be washed in the blood of the Lamb. There's a fountain flowing for the soul unclean. Oh, be washed in the blood of the Lamb. Are you washed in the blood? In the soap and the blood of the Lamb. Are your garments spotless as the whitest snow? Oh, be washed in the blood of the Lamb. Our first service on this Day of the Atonement, from the Shepherd Rod book by V.T. Hoff. It's the number 4 book. And it's, we're on the part of page 52. The name of our sermon is Esau and Jacob. So it says that, okay, we're closing out a 20-year period since we left our father's house. Actually, this is our 6th atonement since we arrived here. We're closing out officially of a 20-year period in the Antichrist. This is the year that we start the revival and reformation. This is the year that Yahweh's people that are afflicted, surely afflicted, will be bound up and healed and come to into full unity with each other and with you and your son Yahshua. We're going to start with page 52, Volume 4 of the Shepherd God, and it's going to be Esau and Jacob, and Isaac entreated the Yahweh for his wife. because she was barren. And it's using Lord here, and they usually use that Lord when they're referring to Yahshua the Son. So let's back up and try that again, Esau and Jacob, and see how that will work. And Isaac entreated the Yahshua for his wife because she was barren. And the Yahshua was entreated of him, and Rebecca his wife conceived. I think we better back up and go ahead and deal with the Father on this subject to begin with until we get more inspiration. So we're going to start once again, section 3 of the Shepherd God, page 52, Esau and Jacob. And Isaac entreated the Yahweh for his wife because she was barren. And the Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went unto to inquire of the Yahweh, and Yahweh said unto her, two nations are in thy womb. And two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. When her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over, like an hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took a hold on Esau's heel. And his name was called Jacob. Genesis 25, 21-26. For the inspiration says that Rebecca had no children, and Isaac entreated the Yahweh, and the Yahweh was entreated of him, and the Yahweh gave her twin. If this be the case, certainly it was not an accident. The Yahweh was in it. But if she only asked for a child, why did he give her twins? We do not suppose the Yahweh gave her twins to cause a lot of trouble in the family as it did. Why did they struggle within the mother? Why one red and hairy and the other white and smooth? And why one take hold of the heel of the other? All these questions come to our mind. Whatever the reason, it was divine design, for he gave her the children. Certainly no one would think Yahweh did this without a purpose and a view. Yahweh himself told the mother, it is an object lesson. For he said unto her, two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people. It is true that the result was two nations on the stage of the action, Edom and Israel. So we have to understand then that Edom would then be the descendants of Cain. Whoever occupied the throne of the kingdom of Edom was occupying the throne of the descendants of Cain, the one that slew Abel in the Garden of Eden. for Edom and Israel, but where is the lesson? Whatever the lesson, it must, in other words, those two nations was Israel and the Palestinian, or the Israel and the Muslims, let's just call it like it is. The Arabs, the Egyptians, Edom and Israel. But where is the lesson? Whatever the lesson, it must be for Yahweh's people. It cannot be for the Old Testament time, for they never profited by it in any way. So he says that we read in Galatians 4:22-25 that Isaac typified the New Testament church and Ishmael the old. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh. But he of the free woman was by the promise, which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar, for this Agar is a Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth unto Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. For the Paul writes here that Ishmael represents Israel after the flesh. The descendants of Ishmael then were Edomites, Esauites. Hagar represents the church that was organized at Mount Sinai at the time when Moses selected the 70 elders, see Patriarchs and Prophets, page 382. For the Sanhedrin was composed of the 70 men. Therefore, the number 70 represents a church organization. Thus Paul says, for this Agar is the Mount Sinai. Women, a symbol of the church, which is in Arabia. This same organization, after they wandered 40 years in the wilderness, crossed the Jordan and established themselves in the Jerusalem. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. Agar then symbolized the church before the cross, Jerusalem of old. Again, we read, beginning with the 26th verse, but the Jerusalem, which is above, the new Jerusalem in heaven now, Revelation 21, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, rejoice, thou barren, that bearest, not share, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not, for the desolate hath many more children, desolate, for Sarah stepped aside and gave her husband unto Agar, than she which hath an husband, Agar. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of the promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh, Ishmael, persecuted him that was born after the spirit, Isaac. Even so it is now, Galatians 4:26-29. For the ancient Israel in the days of the apostles persecuted the apostolic Nazarene believers that Yeshua is a government, that he set up his government with of the New Testament. Here inspiration says, Sarah represents Jerusalem, which is above in heaven. Now, Revelation 21, and she is the mother of us all. Paul, in the writing unto the New Testament church, Gentile, says, Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of the promise. Paul means that Isaac represents the children of the New Testament, and Sarah is a symbol of the church. Coming back to our subject, Esau and Jacob, whatever the lesson of these twins, it cannot apply unto the Old Testament church. For if Isaac is the father of them and represents the New Testament church, then the lesson must apply unto the church represented by him. If the father was 60 years of age at the time Esau and Jacob were born, the lesson cannot be for the early part of the church. The symbol must be for a latter period. Symbol of the struggle. And that's the period we're in now in the Antitype here in the 12th parabolic hour. Symbol of the struggle. For the children struggle before they were delivered. And this too must be a lesson. It is intended to point out the time when the application is made. It has been defined by the father's age that the lesson is for a later period. For the children's struggle was before they were delivered. The lesson then is for the Yahweh's people just before they are delivered. The time and church is our next subtitle. For the lesson cannot be in the two churches. Why? Because they are born from one mother. They must come under or with the same message. Why? Because they are begotten by the same Father. If this is the generation that will witness the end and the church that shall be delivered and be translated without tasting death, then this must be the time under which this lesson applies. Now, the question is, in which church shall it find its fulfillment? It can only find its fulfillment in the Yahweh's true church. If the present churches have fallen and are termed Babylon, then they have neither part nor lot in this lesson. If the Seventh-day Adventist Church is the true Israel and has a message which no other organization teaches, and if the message we bear is the advent of Yahshua and the end of the world and this generation, then this is the church. Esau and Jacob, two classes of people. It's our next subtitle. For the Bible says the twins represent two classes of the people. If this is true, then we have two classes of the people in the church. One class is represented by the Esau, the other by the Jacob. Now referring on to the Testimonies to Ministries, page 46, we read, there are two opposing influences continually exerted on the members of the church. One influence is working for the purification of the church, and the other for the corrupting of the people of the Yahweh. One of the twins was red and hairy, and the other smooth and white. Both people are sinful. Why? Because Esau was red, which is scarlet, the sign of sin. Jacob was white, but the name betrays the man, for the name Jacob means deceiver. Okay. Symbol of the birthright. As our next subtitle, Esau was the one born first. Whatever was to be inherited by the birthright was to be Esau's. For the law of the Bible is that the firstborn had the right to the priesthood. For this reason, Jacob coveted Esau's birthright. Esau then represents a class of priesthood, symbol of the hair, as our next subtitle. As he was born hairy, his body must have been covered with a heavy coat of hair. For when Jacob wished to deceive his father, in order to obtain the blessing, Rebekah, his mother, covered his neck and hands with the skins of the kids. Isaac's suspicion of whether it was Esau or Jacob speaking compelled him to examine the body of his son, Genesis 27:22-23. And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he left him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of the Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, as his brother Esau's hand, so he blessed him. The heavy coat of the hair over Esau's body was unnatural, and the only reason why Yahweh should have made him thus was to symbolize the character of the class he represents. And Willis W. Johnson, Angel of the Seventh Candlestick, let us hear, prophet and the third feeding pastor for the Adventist at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas. He was in charge of the Everlasting Kingdom during the judgment, last period of the judgment of the dead from 1970 to 2003. Okay, they said, well, actually, the fourth movement, the Seventh Day Adventist movement from 1975, I mean from 1844 to 2003, was a temporal kingdom here on earth. They had a temporal kingdom. And that's the reason why their movement came to an end, and we have this last movement, the fifth movement, that has been carried on by the house of David, and it's called the Everlasting Kingdom of Heaven, Daniel 2:44-45. But the Seventh-day Adventist Church was never called the Everlasting Kingdom of Heaven. Never called that. But it's purified saints that come out of her,
the first fruits harvest 144,000, they operate and with the fifth movement and that and the everlasting kingdom. Okay. Samson's hair was a symbol of his power. Let's read this again. For the hair was a symbol of power, honor, glory, and talent. The Yahweh given gift to enable him to execute the duties of his office as family priest. The following reasons are given for the believing thus, Yahweh in the beginning created man and the woman. He made the man to be king and ruler over all of his creation. And he crowned him with the honor, glory, and power, talents necessary to create his office. Unto the man he gave the beard, and not to the woman. Samson's hair was a symbol of his power. In 1 Corinthians 11:15, we read, but if the woman has long hair, it is a glory unto her, symbol of the Esau's, a heel, H-E-E-L, H-E-E-L. At the birth of the twins, Esau came first. And Jacob took hold of Esau's heel. Thus the younger was led out by the older. This could not have just happened, for it seems to be a miracle. This is the only time our attention is called to an occurrence of this kind. Therefore, Yahweh must have intended it so. And if he did, there must be a lesson in it. It would not be hard for one to see the lesson taught here by the miracle. Jacob was led out by the heel of Esau. Therefore, Esau must represent a class of leaders, symbol of the being red. Esau was born red, but Jacob, white and smooth. As a rule, twins are born alike. But in this instance, it was reversed. There is no similarity between Esau and Jacob as twin brothers. And the character, appearance, color, or covering. Therefore, we have another miracle. This symbol is simple to understand. Red is the same as scarlet. The Bible uses scarlet as a symbol of sin, as in Isaiah 1:18, Revelation 17:3, Revelation 12:3. For the Esau represents a sinful class of people, as well as Jacob. But the class whom Esau represents are given the great privileges and opportunities to make good, symbol of the Esau's character. For the character of the Esau's manhood reveals the character of the priesthood whom he represents. Esau was a mighty hunter, a man of the field. All his interest was in game and his stomach, but very much disinterested in his position as a priest of the family. For the class represented by him is far more interested in the pleasure gained and the affairs of the world than they are in the Yahweh given privileges. Esau could not control his appetite. He thought more of his stomach than he did of his position, office, or priest. He represents a class of the people whose Yahweh is whose God is their stomach, they would rather satisfy their lustful appetite than to execute their duty and keep Yahweh's truth. For Esau's blessing, Esau had a valuable blessing within his reach. For the immortal inheritance of life, it was his privilege to bring forth, inherit the 12 sons, the 12 tribes of the Israel. From Esau were to come prophets, kings, and princes. Through the line of Esau, the King of Kings, the blessed Yeshua, was to come. All of these wonderful blessings were to be his. There are many who are like Esau, for he represents a class who have a special blessing within their reach. What is the blessing? It is an inheritance of the 12 tribes of the true Israel. So the true Israel today would be the Adventist Church, spiritual Israel that produced the 12 tribes of the 144,000 as the first fruits harvest. And so that proves that the Seventh-day Adventist is a true church today and a true movement. Who are to be as priests and kings is 144,000. Read volume 5, pages 475 and 6. For this class have the privilege of bringing about the second coming of Yeshua and to lead the church over the borders of the heavenly Canaan and into the glories of the Yahweh, just as the line of Esau had the privilege to bring about the first advent of Yeshua, and as Esau failed on his part, just so this class represented by Esau is in danger of the failing on their part. Think of the loss of the inheritance, immortal life that is as enduring as the life of the Yahweh, the creator of the universe. Happiness immeasurable and an eternal weight of the glory. Really, the Esau lusted for a favorite dish and sacrificed his birthright for the gratifying of his appetite and for the receiving only a little for it, a bowl of red pottage. He represents this class who have been given great light and privileges to make good, but fail to do so. This class is to sacrifice an eternal weight of glory which no human lips can tell. Esau flattered himself that he could dispose of his birthright at will and buy it back at pleasure. But when he sought to buy it back, even at a great sacrifice on his part, he was not able to do so, for he sought for repentance cheerfully and with tears, but it was all in vain. How fearful the thought to sacrifice truth for the worldly gain at the expense of the life everlasting. Read volume 2, pages 38 and 39. For the following quotation is taken from the Patriarchs and Prophets, page 182. As Esau awoke to see the folly of his rash exchange when it was too late to recover his loss, so it will be in the day of Yahweh with those who have boarded their airship to heaven for the selfish gratification. Because of his indifference for the divine blessing and requirements, Esau is called in the scriptures a profane person. He represents those who lightly value the redemption purchased for them by the Asher, by the blood of the Asher, and are ready to sacrifice their heirship to heaven for the perishable things of the earth. Multitudes live for the present with no thought or care for the future. Like the Esau, they cry, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Okay, so that's in Patriarchs and Prophets, page 181. Symbol of the pottage. Now, this is our next subtitle. It says, Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents, while Esau hunted in the field. Jacob saw a sod pottage made of the lentils and colored red. We do not know the kind of coloring Jacob used to obtain the tempting shade of that fancy dish. Evidently, he alone knew the secret. And Jacob sod pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said unto Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die. And what profit shall this birthright do to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he swore unto him. And he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of the lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright, Genesis 25:29-34. That's what happened at Kermit. Brother Johnson despised his birthright, for he was the antitypical Esau for that 33 and a half years that we were together, from 1970 to 2003. Esau came from the field that day without any game. As he entered the house, he saw Jacob garnishing the fancy article of food. Immediately Esau exclaimed, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Esau was not faint because of a great hunger, but seeing the new article of food could not control his appetite. Jacob's answer was, "Sell me this day thy birthright, if you must have any of this pottage." And Esau said, "Behold, I am on the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do to me?" Esau was not on the point to die because of the hunger or the physical ailment. For a sick man cannot eat as he did. Neither was it because of the lack of food, for he was in his father's house, and Isaac was a rich man. It was because of his lust for the pottage, for he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. The symbol of the pottage is health reform. Because of his indifference to the divine blessing and requirements, Esau is called in scripture a profane person. He represents those who lightly value the redemption purchased for them by the Asherah's blood, and are ready for the sacrificing of their heirship unto heaven for the perishable things of the earth. Multitudes live for the present with no thought or care for the future. Like Esau, they cry, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Patriarchs and Prophets, 181. As Esau awoke to see the folly of his rash exchange when it was too late to recover his love, so it will be in the day of the Yahweh with those who have bartered their heirship to a heaven for the selfish gratification. That was on page 182 from the Patriarchs and Prophets. Okay, it says we must make our choice while we are given the freedom to select either the pottage or the birthright. Edom attacked, for the transaction was made, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Just then his name was changed, therefore was his name called Edom. Thus Esau despised his birthright, for the name Edom means red or scarlet, the symbol of sin. Esau was born red, but was not called by that name, Edom, at first. The class which Esau represents are in danger of losing out because of the lustful appetite, disregard of the health reform. Thus they are called Edom. Okay, it says that this is a class of whom the prophet Isaiah has reference to in Isaiah 63:1. Change of the names. Both Esau and Jacob represents two sinful classes. Esau by the color of his skin, and Jacob by his name. For the names of both were changed. Jacob, because he coveted something worthwhile. Esau, because of lust. Jacob's name meant deceiver, for the name Esau in Hebrew, Hairy, which symbolically would be honored, as previously explained, meant he that finishes. Note the remarkable meaning of the name, signifying the class given the privilege to finish the work. In Revelation 3:14-16, we read, "And unto the angel of the church of the Laodicean write, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth." Volume 5, page 82. For the call to this great and solemn work was presented to a man of the learning and position. Had these been little in their own eyes and trusted fully in the Yahshua, he would have honored them with the bearing his standard in triumph to the victory. But they separated from Yahweh, yielded to the influence of the world, and the Yahweh rejected them. Loss and Gain is our next subtitle. Jacob, the younger twin, or the one who came last, by holding on to Esau's heel, represents a class which came into the third angel's message by the leadership of the class represented by the Esau. Jacob had an earnest desire and great zeal for the position which his brother occupied, though he was destitute of the qualifications which Esau possessed for performing the duties of this office, which he coveted and bought. Yet by his great zeal and determination, he made good. The price he paid was food, worth nothing, but that which he received was of the great value. Regardless of how much training or talent one has in a certain occupation, he can never be successful unless he has a great zeal and interest in that particular line. Esau and Jacob. Esau had a great deal to lose, but his loss was Jacob's gain. That which Jacob offered as payment for Esau's valuable possession was of little worth. Therefore, what Esau gained was little more than nothing. It was not long after Jacob secured the blessing from his father Isaac that Esau fell with a remorse, threatened Jacob's life. Both classes represented by the Esau and Jacob may be in the trouble, one because of the realization of their loss, the other because of the hatred and manifested toward them. Jacob's dream, our next subtitle. Jacob, at the advice of his parents, left home and went to Padan Aram, and on his way, the very first night, Yahweh appeared unto him in a dream, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached unto heaven, and behold, the angels of the Yahweh ascending and descending on it, Genesis 28:12. For the ladder represents Yeshua. For Yahweh the Father stood above it. For the ladder represents Yeshua. For the Yeshua stood For the Father, Yahweh the Father stood above it. Jacob at the foot of it. Genesis 28:13. This dream gave Jacob great courage, and he made a vow to Yahweh. Jacob was now to become the father of Israel, 12 tribes through whom many nations shall be blessed, a type of the Israel by the promise, the 12 tribes, the 144,000. The dream which he had in the night was only a vision and representation of some future event, for the meaning of the dream can be only one thing. For the meaning of the dream can mean or be only one thing. If the latter represents the Yeshua, the angels as messengers, Yahweh the Father at the head and Jacob at the foot, it means a complete connection with the heaven and the true ladder, the ladder rain, the loud cry of the third angel's message, see Revelation 18:1. Mothers of Israel, this is our next subtitle. But note that the Jacob went to Padan Aram and to the house of the Bethuel, his mother's father. Okay. There he married Leah, and Rachel, the daughters of Laban, Zilpah and Bilhah, the maids of Leah, and Rachel also became his wives. These are the mothers whence the 12 tribes came, but they are only the mothers in the type of the true tribes, the 144,000. Leah was the only legal wife unto Jacob. Rachel was her sister. Zilpah and Bilhah were bondwomen. That Leah represents the true church of Yahshua, the Seventh-day Adventist. Rachel, a sister church, but not the true Protestant. Zilpah and Bilhah, the world, religious and irreligious. These are the mothers of the 144,000, and the way they, the 144,000, are gathered. So while the 12 tribes came from the many mothers, they were begotten by the same father. So with the true, the 144,000, while they are gathered from all churches and the world, they must be brought into the one church at the same period of the church's history by the same message, the third angel's message. Jacob, homeward bound, time of trouble. This is our next subtitle. At the end of the 20 years, Jacob was homeward bound to the promised land and his father's house with a great possession. By the time he arrived at his father's house, he had his 12 sons, the heads of the 12 tribes. Before Jacob entered his father's house, he went through that terrible struggle and wrestled with the angel till the breaking of the day. Genesis 32:24-29. For the Jacob's wrestling with the angel typifies the time of the Jacob's trouble for the church. For we read in the early writings, pages 36, 37, a decree went forth to slay the saints, which caused them to cry day and night for the deliverance. This was the time of the Jacob's trouble. See also Patriarchs and Prophets, pages 202 and 3. So it says that type of the promised land, Israel and his father's house. Our next subtitle. If the promised land of the Canaan is a type of the promised heavenly Canaan, then Jacob's father's house is a type of our father's house. Just so, when Israel, the true enters our father's house in the heavenly Canaan, they will be the 12 tribes, the 144,000. The question arises, are these all that will be saved in the third angel's message? Remember that when the Jacob entered his father's house with his 12 sons, he had many servants, male and female, that outnumbered his tribe's sons. His 12 sons represented many times. Just so with the Israel, the true, who will have with them a great multitude, which no man could number, Revelation 7:9. For the great multitude came by the effort of the tribes after the fulfillment of the Ezekiel 9. This study cannot fit another case, nor any other church in all the history on the earth. Seventh-day Adventists are the only people and church that has ever been called Israel who have the truth of the healthy form, and that would be in danger of the selling of their birthright for a bowl of pottage. By this fact alone, while there are many others, we may know that the Seventh-day Adventist Church is the Yahweh's true church. Well, it looks like that's the end of our study on Esau and Jacob at this time. Well, let's continue on a little bit more on the next section. This is section number 4 of the Shepherd Rod, with a title, Who is Israel by the Promise? For the experience of the Israelites and the departing from Egypt was written for the instruction of those who should live in the last days, before the overflowing scourge shall come upon the dwellers of the earth. For Yahshua calls upon all who are Israelites, indeed, to prepare for that event. Volume 6, page 195. For the 12 tribes of the Israel after the flesh are but a type of the Israel by the promise, the 144,000. As there were Gentiles among Israel, the type, there would be Gentiles in Israel, the true. For the early part of the apostolic church For the early part of the apostolic church of the 12 apostles of the Nazarene Creed, in the apostolic time at the cross, could not be called Israel, for the history of the church then was typified by the Isaac, according unto the Galatians 4:22-31, and as explained on the pages 53-54. Isaac was not called Israel, for he was the father of the Jacob, and it was Jacob who was called Israel. Therefore, Israel, whatever part of the church it is, must come sometime later in the history of the church. Jacob was the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, and if Israel, after the flesh, is a type of Israel by the promise, the true, then let us study the beginning of Israel after the flesh, if we are to locate or to know of the Israel by the promise, the 144,000. For the journey of Israel down into Egypt could not have been an accident. Whatever the reason for it, Yahweh was in it. For the Joseph said unto his brothers, Genesis 45:5, Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourself, that you sold me hither. For Yahweh did send me before you to preserve life. Joseph declares that Yahweh was the cause for him going into Egypt. Yahweh had also told Abraham that he and his seed would sojourn and be afflicted in a strange land 430 years. But why did Yahweh send them into Egypt? Why was Joseph sold at the age of 17, merely as a lad, into the hand of the cruel Ishmaelites, and led unto a strange land to be resold as a slave? We certainly would not make a mistake by thinking that Joseph became faint-hearted on the way. There surely must have been a reason for all for this ill treatment. In Egypt, Joseph was sold to serve as a slave, and later was thrown into the dungeon for a number of years. Why did Yahweh lead Israel into that strange land where idolatry prevailed everywhere? Yahweh certainly knew that in that land there would become slaves in just a short while. Why would heaven allow Yahweh's chosen people to become servants to a nation whose idols were their gods? Why did Yahweh permit the lashes of the Egyptian taskmasters to be applied upon the backs of his people? Why would divine love permit the children of Abraham, Yahweh's friend, while yet in the infancy, to be drowned in the river Nile? Who can say how great Yahweh was ignorant of all these things which took place, or that he made a mistake? For the only answer that can be offered is that it was all heavenly design. But what was it all about? Yahweh must have had some special reason and specific purpose for an object lesson to be taught at a certain time. One may say, Yahweh did it all to show his power. But would the all-wise and great Yahweh, full of love and mercy, destroy his children to show his power? Not even an earthly mortal, human father would dare destroy his children to show his power. Who would dare say human beings have greater love or better judgment than the great Yahweh, whose mercy is immeasurable, whose love fills the universe, whose wisdom is unsearchable, whose judgment justice? Not only has chosen suffered of the bondage and cruelty, but the Egyptians as well. At the time of the Exodus movement, at the departure of Israel, the plagues came upon all Egypt, and the nation was nearly ruined. On the night of the Passover, there was a death in every dwelling where there was no blood on the doorpost and in every stall of the beast. And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of the Pharaoh that sitteth upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservants that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of the beast. Exodus 11:5. This brings the end of our study for this hour. Contest is the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close.